Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson.
It went live now. I thought we started and then it's just come up live red in the corner. All right, people. Full start. But we go again. Yo, people. What's good? Welcome back to another podcast of the New Spurs Order. It's another week. It's international break, but we're back this weekend. The game against Luton. Now, before we get into anything, please let's make sure that you follow us on all social media platforms. That is at New Spurs Order, Instagram, Twitter, or X, TikTok, pretty much everywhere. Everywhere you can find us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Make sure you're subscribing, hitting the like button on YouTube, sharing us some love. It's all greatly appreciated. But happy Good Friday, everyone, man. How's everyone doing? How you doing, Scott? Tops, what you saying, man?
I'm out here, bruv. I just need the Premier League to get back up and running because internationals are boring.
What are you saying, Tops?
Yeah, man. To be honest with you, just need us to right our wrongs after the debacle at Craven Cottage like 10 days ago. So I'm just kind of raring to go, even though it'll be against what looks like a weakened Luton side. But we just need to right the wrongs from that last game, man.
100%. I feel like we were all looking forward to a big game, a good performance. But before we even break into anything on the weekend, we obviously know the past 2 weeks, there's been some big international fixtures, some big games. We've had a few players that have been playing during that time. And, you know, I take it you guys have been doing some scouting. Did you guys watch any of the international break games? And if you did, who caught your eye, man?
I watched the England-Brazil game. And I ain't going to lie to you. Paqueta. Listen, that guy. Listen, that guy is quality, bruv. He's quality. West Ham don't deserve him. They don't need him. You know what I'm saying? So, West Ham and all your fans, you know, this summer, put him on the window shop. You know what I mean? So, we can quickly come in with a small little 40 million. Move in it. Because he was moving quality.
Yeah, West Ham have definitely got a few players in that team that just... You think they've got too much quality to be there, but they're building something. They're definitely building something dangerous, man. You've got to rate what they're doing, especially with the most recent acquisitions in them. What did you guys think about, obviously, Madison? Obviously, he come on, he missed the first game, didn't get no minutes, and then he had a nice little 25-minute cameo against Belgium where England obviously had to save it last minute, but a clean assist was what I would call it. Really nice, really smart play from him to set up Bellingham. What was your thoughts on that, Tops, if you caught the game?
Yeah, I caught the game as well. I thought the game wasn't great, but I thought when he came on, he was really, really positive. Similarly to what they said on the main pod, shout out to Yao for the main pod. But I just think it's so positive to have a player who is so... He almost seems like fearless. Like he always wants to get on the ball. He always wants to take it in dangerous areas, and he's always kind of making passes to try and open up the game. And even though it was a short little cameo, the little part that he did have the game, you know, is kind of enough of a proof that him playing as like an advanced eight or even as that central 10, he can give the team some level of output, or at least some level of creativity. So I was kind of happy with him. And to be honest with you, I feel like he needed that as well. You know, having the long injury at Spurs and coming back hasn't really been himself, in my opinion. But I imagine being called up to England squad and also getting the assist to draw us the game against Belgium would have definitely lifted his confidence. Like, I'm fairly confident that he'll go to the Euros, to be honest with you. I feel like if he has a decent end to the season for Spurs, drags us hopefully into Europe, it should be enough to really get him through, because he definitely offers something different to what we have in those areas. But it's also as well, like, something I always kind of think about when I'm thinking of internationals is that, what is your mileage look towards the end of the season? And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, he's had that injury, but he hasn't had too many miles in his legs. So hopefully by the summer, he'll be kind of ready to go even more.
Yeah, no, with Maddison, is I feel like he's always been a bit unfortunate with the England team, because he's one of the top creative players, I think, there. But it's just the different combinations that you can have in midfield. It's hard to squeeze him in sometimes when you're trying to play Bellingham, you're trying to play Rice, you're trying to play Foden. It is hard to work him in. But I agree with you. I feel like if he can end the season really well, he'll sort of push for himself to be in that team and in that position, playing the 10 role and sort of that advanced state. Because like you said, I feel like he's one of the best players to play there for England. But what do you guys think about the comparisons I've been hearing recently? Some people are trying to compare him to like a Bruno, just saying that he's hero ball. He only, like, because some of his recent performances for Tottenham, we've seen like he hasn't really controlled the game as well. At the start of the season, I feel like he was doing really good in all phases of play. But as of recent, we've seen he's sort of been a shadow of himself, and in some of the games when you expect for him to take the ropes and just, you know, control the ball, keep it moving a bit quicker, take us forward, he sort of shied away from the role. What do you guys think of that?
I think the comparison to Bruno is ludicrous.
It's egregious. Come on,
we all watch ball. Like, we know Bruno is an absolute maniac. Like, that guy just spams balls forwards and hopes it reaches its target, bro. He's quintessentially a war criminal. That's what Bruno is. Yeah, like, Maddison's not that. The problem with Maddison is that, and I've said this in the group, he's just recently come back from an injury. You don't know, like, most players, anybody that's played any sort of sport, you know, sometimes you might come back and you might hit the ground running, you know, but most times it's going to take you a few games to get back into like some sort of rhythm. And there's going to be games where you look like you're in rhythm and, you know, things going well. And then there's going to be games where you're completely out of rhythm. I mean, we've got a perfect example in our squad with Bentancourt. You know, he came back. We thought, all right, yeah, cool. You know, he seems to have some minutes in his legs. He should get up and running. And then the next few games after that, he was largely wanting. So I'm not really worried about, you know, how he's returned back to the team. I think even the England cameo showed that he's starting to get, you know, a feel for the game again. And, you know, we should really be seeing the best of him in the last eight games.
Not for real.
I agree.
Yeah. And also on just some of our other performances that we had during the international break, Vicario debut for Italy, clean sheet, looking... Just feel like Vicario this season hasn't had a bad game. Obviously, he's had like a moment, maybe in his first game, he had like a shaky moment.
Yeah.
I can't look at Vicario one time and ever say he's had a bad performance or even a bad. Like, he's just been so clean and so class throughout the whole campaign. Sort of carries himself with it's like a certain aura about his game. Like, he's just so confident. And you know, whenever we got these one on ones, like with Lloris, with Forster that time when we always knew people are going through on goal. It's like, fuck, Lloris is near post. It's techie. Like every single time with Vicario, he's been saving us some games. You'd probably look at him and be like without him this season, we'd probably be a few points short of where we are. So did anyone catch any of Italy's games?
Yeah, I actually oddly did as well. It's funny really, because like last season, Donnarumma was having a bit of a rough time of it at PSG. And even though he was, a lot of people had been saying that it was maybe time to kind of think about a new, different goalkeeper. And to be honest with you, when Vicario got his move to Spurs. He hadn't even represented Italy in terms of a start. So to be honest with you, they've always said that he's kind of the next big thing. And actually, some people, even last season under Empoli, were really calling for him. So to be honest, him getting a start against, I think it was Ecuador or Venezuela, one of the two, was really positive for him. And I think as well, it broke a ridiculously long streak that Donnarumma had as a starting goalkeeper for Italy. And honestly, he did really well. Like this season, I can't really speak, you know, any more positively about him. Like, honestly, outside of maybe the first game against Brentford, which was kind of shaky and obviously, you know, put a lot of pressure on him, I think he's been exemplary. I really do think he's been a stalwart for us. Despite, you know, the high sort of XG that we've had this season, he's been a large reason as to why we are where we are in the league. And to be honest, I think he cemented that place for himself really, really well. Also, Udogie as well, who started the second friendly, which I think is really important for him as well. DiMarco is pretty much their starter over there at left back. But Udogie getting some minutes was actually really positive. And the fact that they won both games was actually really important for them as well. So it's kind of good that we have those two players starting for Italy and also, you know, being the same team at Spurs. And obviously, you know, lots of players who kind of have this relationship with other teammates. It's kind of good because not only are they playing together at club level, but international level, building that synergy, building that relationship. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I feel like, especially because they're young players, it's so key for them to get these big moments at the international level because it builds their confidence. And like you say, growing into the later on into the season, even just the match sharpness, we need our players to be playing two games a week sometimes because waiting 2 weeks for a game, that's where we check out and Spurs turn off. Like we probably look our best when we're playing game week in, week out, and we're forced to turn up. But pretty much with the international, that's all we really had. I know Richarlison was away with Brazil, but he was omitted from the squad, didn't really play too much, and he didn't really get his chance. And then you had Porro, who was playing for Spain, who was decent. I know he got cooked by Diaz one time. I was watching that game against Colombia, and it was looking a bit techie, but Diaz does what Diaz does, man. He cooks most of the wingers in on the right back in the league, so he can't really do much with that. But moving away from internationals and into some actual Spurs stuff, I know we were just speaking about Vicario, and we know Vicario, one of our best signings last year. A lot of people weren't happy when we first signed him because he wasn't a marquee signing. And we were going for David Raya, as everyone knows, 30, 40 million. Some Spurs fans weren't happy that we wasn't willing to fess up the money, but we turned away to our second option and we probably walked out better than we thought we was the better position than we was originally in. So I don't know about everyone else, but I was more than happy. Well, I think everyone else is more than happy with the Vicario signing. But what do you guys think about, because of course there was that, was it article that come out earlier in the week saying that Spurs won't be looking to make a marquee signing. We all sort of, and said that we'll continue to sign players in the way that we have been in the past, is we'd rather pick up 2, 3 or maybe 4 players than one. I personally feel like it was misinterpreted. But what do you guys think of that whole situation about the marquee signing? Do you think Spurs can sign a marquee signing? And what do you actually think Ange meant by that? I'll go to Scott first.
Hey, man, listen, I've been a fan for many years. Yeah. And, some of the young bucks, you know, that have only just recently been watching this, what I'd call nicer times of being a Spurs fan, yeah? They haven't seen the pain and rage that I've gone through. They haven't seen the streets looking like tar instead of the streets looking like a brand new building that they see now, yeah? So, for me, all of this signing a marquee signing stuff, it's nonsense. Most big teams sign a marquee player. You know, there's enough marquee. What is the terminology marquee? Big name signing. You know, that's what it breaks down to. Yeah. Last summer, our marquee signing was Maddison. Let's not fool anybody. You know, it was a marquee sign. You know, everyone can be like, you know, he should have gone to, it's a marquee sign. Yeah. And what we've seen, well, we saw in the first 13 games, of course, what that was in signing Maddison. A marquee signing this summer, it could be anyone. It could be a left winger, right winger, a forward, another midfielder, a number six. It's probably not going to be a name that most people know about, like similar to like a Mickey van der Ven, but it'll be a big enough purchase that, you know, heads should be turning. And so I don't feel like I agree with the quotes that Postecoglou came out with, saying that, you know, it's not necessary that we don't need to sign £100 million worth player. We need to sign a player that makes an impact and pushes us forward as a team. It's that simple.
No, I absolutely agree. I feel like the term marquee signing is a funny one, because you look at other clubs and sometimes comparison actually can actually be the thief of joy, because we made a marquee signing in a player who was already a kind of proven at this level in this league at what we would say is an inferior football club, and he has landed as a success. Not to mention, throughout the years, we already know that sometimes the big name signings, they just haven't worked. Like initially, Richarlison didn't, you know, and we can even go as far back as players like Soldado and the signing that we made in Ndombele as well. And actually, over the years, whilst we've tried to sort of right those wrongs, from the errors that we've made in the transfer market, I think last summer was probably one of the best summers, and even actually the summer before, because we were largely going with the transfer policy of signing young, quality, high potential players who could come into the squad and improve the squad in areas. And we look at the impact someone like Sarr has come in and done. We look at the impact Udogi, and we look at the impact of someone like Vicario as well. So I actually think this notion of a marquee signing is, considering the club we are, I just don't think it's something that's really relevant. And at this point, I would actually be happy to continue in the way that we have been, because I also think as well that transfers nowadays are not, they're not plug and play. You know, you can have a position of a player and you can have an area that needs to be improved, but it's not necessarily as easy as buying a top level player for a lot of money and expecting that top level player to just suddenly drop into wherever you need him to and to be performing at the like required level. So I kind of think that we kind of have to take this one with a little bit with a pinch of salt and just accept that, one, our policy doesn't actually allow for us to spend the money on these sort of marquee signings, truly because we never have. And two, actually, the current model that we use is actually very positive. I don't have any issues with it. You know, names like Van der Ven and Vicario came onto the transfer policy desk last season, and whilst a lot of people didn't know about these names, they've actually come in and been, what would we say, is our like star players for us this season, you know? So I think it's a difficult one. I think if there are players that really do come on the market, i.e., in my opinion, players like an Eze or maybe a Neto or something, or even this Todibo guy that can come in, there's always an opportunity. And if an opportunity arises and it's worth definitely being done, you know, it would definitely be looked at, I imagine. It seems that we're doing a lot more due diligence with regards to the player profiles and the kind of players that Ange kind of wants playing from as well.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, and probably the key difference that we've probably noticed over the past year and a half to 2 years in our transfer strategy is that when we have the one, or when we're going for a player, we tend to have two or three players in behind that are very similar profile, and they're still of a good level. Because before, mm-hmm. I feel like the problem with Spurs is that we just had that one player, and if we didn't get that player, we're scrambling, run around looking for a replacement, and then Levy will just end up getting a player that he knows he can get a good deal for. And that was the problem we faced for year after year after year. But now we look like we're getting into a better position where we're prepping for windows better. We're looking for player profiles, and rather than just names or looking for numbers, it's looking at the, like you said, you can't just bring in a big player and expect him to fit the system. It's going to be someone that's going to come in, fits the system perfectly. And they don't always need to be a marquee signing. Sometimes you don't need marquee signings to take your team to the next level. You just need someone to play their role, play their position, and just do it well. If we can bring in someone that can play a six and just, you know, screen the defence, cover it well, win balls, and then play it off to the likes of Maddison and Sarr to, you know, fill out the rest of the game, then I feel like our team can already take the step forward. But I also think the thing is with marquee signings, you know, signing players at 80, 90, maybe 100 million, there's no point of doing it when the team's not ready to compete. I feel like this summer, it would be too soon anyway. We already know this team's had one season together. Next season, if we can go and bring three or four players in, then we would be taking that step closer to competing and seeing where the team can take us. But if the team has a really good year next year, then I think feel like that's when you start looking at, let's bring in one player that can just take this team there. Bring in a top-class, world-class player. And that's when you start specialising positions. But in the position that we are now, still rebuilding the squad, rebuilding the team, finding a few, still fine-tuning that first 11, we need to spend the money on three or four players to then take the team up and be ready for Champions League. Because we could tell this season, with a few players out, we wouldn't be ready to play Europa League football or anything. We'd look horrible in Europe. Next year, if we sign three or four players, we take ourselves out of that position where we're going to be ready for Europe, but how good is the team going to be able to compete on both fronts? We won't know until we see it. So I feel like we need to give ourselves that time to figure things out before we even start talking about marquee signings, because we're just not ready for a marquee signing. And like you said, also, it depends what you define as one, because to me, Maddison was a marquee signing. He might not have classed it because he's 40 million, but that's still a 70 million pound player in there. Like, he's a top quality English baller that was banging in the Prem, doing his thing for the last three or four years. One of the most creative players up there with the likes of De Bruyne, Bruno and Odegaard. So This is what we're talking about, a marquee player. It's just maybe because he didn't have the money on his back and money on his head, sorry, that people didn't think he's a marquee signing. But off the back of all of the transfer talk and everything that happened, it came out mainly because did we see a few scouts left, didn't they say? We've got three or four scouts that have been at the club.
Three scouts have left.
And do you guys know any? I don't know anything about the scouts. I know our scouting team has always been good. I feel like we've always scouted good players, but the ones we've actually signed has been where the problems are. But do you guys know anything about these scouts, and do you think they will affect us in the future, maybe badly or goodly?
Personally, I think change is good. These are, some long stay scouts that have been with the club for a fair considerable amount of time. But for me, like I said, I feel change is good. Yes, you're right. We've probably scouted some, top quality players, and we've probably scouted some absolute stinkers, but essentially it's who we sign. For all we know, these scouts could have been scouting some of the greats in the modern game, and, Levy decided to go sign Højbjerg. So, you take it for whatever it is. But I have no problems with change. A lot of things are changing within our club. Not only just the stadium, but even the revenue that we're generating. I mean, look, man, Beyonce came and done her flipping tour stadium. You hear me, Vlad? So, you hear me? Amidst all the controversies, she said, "Nah, I have to go to Spurs because I need to fall in love." You hear me? So, man, that's what we did. So, I'm all for the change.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, it is important because I suppose with Mr. Lang and Scott Munn being there as well, there has to be a restructuring of how we do things. I think one of the guys, is it Ian Broomfield? He was actually originally the senior scout at Spurs during the Harry Redknapp era. And then he left and then came back later on as part of the senior scouting team in the group. Whilst one of the guys, I think the Benito guy, he was our guy that helped bring in Santiago in the youth squad. So he used to do a lot of work for like Spain and Portugal. But I mean, to be honest with you, like you said, change is never a bad thing. I feel like we are running especially our youth system a bit differently, in the sense that not only are we developing talent, but we're actually doing more of bringing in talent, whether it's from the UK or from outside. And I think that's also really good, because that's obviously improving the level. But generally as well, I think I imagine the influence that Paratici has probably had has probably maybe kind of not made these guys null and void, but maybe reduced the influence that they maybe once had. And to be honest with you, it seems like we've done good scouting in the last sort of 18 months, especially from the academy prospect level, but also from our first team appointments as well.
Yeah, and I also think it's just good to see that I feel like Levy is taking a step back and getting, like, allowing the likes of Scott Munn to take over this football operation and let go of some of these guys that have been here long term, some people that have been around for too long, and we need to make the change, because I know they said we're changing into this sort of more data-driven scouting model, using all the data, going a bit more modern. And to be honest, like I said, the last 18 months has worked for us. The likes of Kulusevski, Porro, Udogi, like the constant names that you can ring off of good signings we had. If you looked at the 18 months prior to that, we probably had one out of 15 good signings. Like, the ratio was crazy. So it's good to see that we're picking it up on that now. And we'll see closer into the summer, and as we build on into it, what players we link with and how that goes. But let's talk about the games, of course. This weekend, Luton at home, 3 o'clock kickoff. Off the back of that horrible, horrid Craven Cottage performance, Van de Ven is back. I know that's splitting opinions on what we should do with that. Let's talk about it. Van de Ven, should he play tomorrow?
No. Having also listened to Rob Edwards, Luton, you know, they're a competitive team. They played really well in games this season, but generally the table doesn't lie. And having spoken as well in his pre-match presser about how many injuries they've had to take, you know, they're coming to a White Hart Lane that is going to be pretty much ready and roaring to go, with a group of players ready to right the wrongs from the Fulham game. I don't really feel with the games that we have coming up, there is a need to kind of risk Van de Ven. I feel like Dragusin will probably have a point to prove after the last game. And I feel that we should have enough, actually, as a squad to be able to allow him to rest. The good thing about the international break, Ange said that everyone pretty much came back unscathed, and Mickey has actually been training pretty much since everyone has been returning. Plus, he was doing lots of his own work before lots of the players returned. So at this point, I just don't really see there's any reason to rush. Like, again, young players and muscular injuries are such a big, big thing. If you go back to players like Cesc and Delhi, and you kind of want to give these players the right amount of time and the right amount of confidence to come back in where they don't feel that they're going to be rushed. And we are very, very fortunate that we're playing a team in the bottom three. To kind of get us back on track to where we want to be. And I don't really think risking him in this kind of a game is really necessary.
Do you know what it is? I hear what you're saying, Tops, and you make some very good points. I definitely can't disagree. But I'm at the point of the season where 3 points is 3 points. Like, it's so important. And we have to pick up points. Like, we can't afford to, like, let Luton score early and then we're chasing around, running after a goal. Like the Crystal Palace game, sort of. Like, we let them go 1-0 up and then we're running after our tails the last 20 minutes trying to get a goal. Like, I don't want to be in that position, especially knowing Man United's on our back. Like, we've got a game in hand over them. It is Chelsea, but a couple wins and a decent run of games, then they're on our back. And that 6-point gap we got at the moment won't look so comfy. So, I don't know. I feel like Van de Ven starting... I wouldn't be mad at Ange if he did start. I get why he would choose him. And I feel like we can bring him off early. Like I said, because it is Luton, we should be able to put ourselves in a position where we're ahead early. But it's just that defence sometimes, I feel like it's not even that it's shaky. It's just they make too much mistakes at times. And there's certain players that just aren't playing their role and taking on their responsibilities enough. And I felt that last week when Dragusin was playing on the left. I feel like if he does play, put Romero on the left and bring Dragusin on the right side, just because I feel like he's more used to playing in the Premier League, playing into that position. Because I know Romero, when he played in the back three, he was more of a he played in the central anyway. So I feel like he might be a bit more adaptable to there. But I wouldn't be against Dragusin starting anyway. What do you think, Scott?
I think, I'll be honest with you, we shouldn't have to be worrying about Luton, with all due respect, especially at home. So Dragusin starting doesn't actually worry me. I think he got dealt harshly at Craven Cottage, if I'm being brutally honest. You know, it was one of those games where I didn't feel like he'd done really too much wrong, but everything went wrong. It's like, rah, you know, what more can man really say or do? You know, say we lost 3-0, and I think even the goals came, I could be wrong, but, you know, some of the goals came from his side, you know. But again, it wasn't legitimately his fault. You know, this was, our midfield was absolutely doing nonsense and allowing Fulham to dictate the game and really cause us all sorts of hell. And the same went for our strikers. They done nothing to even you know, keep us up the field and even make us look like we could be a potential threat. It was one of those weird games where six players were just absolutely useless and expected five players to bail them out. It was horrible. And obviously we couldn't. So for me, it was more a case of like, I don't blame Dragusin one bit for what happened at Craven Cottage. I think he should be able to right the wrongs, especially in this game. And I don't feel Mickey has to even start. If it was me, I think I would go with the same lineup that we had at Craven Cottage. Bring Mickey on with like 30 minutes to go, so he's got some, you know, some match time in his legs. But if I'm being brutally honest, Ange's going to start him.
Yeah, I think Ange is always going to take the safer option, and I feel like he's one of those managers that are of the I'm going to play my best team as long as my best team's available. But what tops do you think that we should keep the same starting 11 as last the game against Craven Cottage? Would you make any changes to that midfield, because the midfield is where we had most of the problems in that game? Fulham absolutely Suma was missing.
No, I don't think we should change. Like I totally hear what is being said. And there was lots of different things that I think we had problems with. I think we had problems with spacing in the midfield. I feel that we allowed Fulham to press us way, way too high. I feel like from a physical perspective, we weren't super competitive. No, we weren't super competitive. We were not competitive in this game against Fulham. And I also feel as well that there was nothing that was sticking in the final third. And everything that we did get in the final third was coming straight back. Fulham were very smart. I feel like Marco Silva set his team up very, very well, and they exploited lots of the spaces in the flanks, and they did it quickly, which I don't think, from a football perspective, I don't think Luton had the ability to do so. And I feel like it is important now that the same team go out and impact Luton the way that they would normally do. And I actually feel, and I still do feel that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Dragusin should start, but knowing Ange and the way that he has looked at players when they've come back from injury, it's more than likely that Van de Ven will start. It's more than likely that he will start. So personally, I would go with the same team because I feel like he should give them confidence to make right what was wrong against Fulham 10 days ago. But in my opinion, he's probably going to go with the same team, but Van de Ven at left centre back.
I can't lie, I don't know about you boys, but the way I'm thinking of this is Luton. And like you say, I feel like we need a performance where we show out, show what we can do, score some goals and bring some confidence back into the team. I think the midfield we should start with is the same one we started with Villa back in December. You know, the Bentancur, Kulusevski, Maddison. And then put Johnson out on the right, Son out on the left, Richie up top. So pretty much a really attacking a team that's going to want to take control of the game. If you're packing Madders in the advanced eight role and then putting Kulu in the 10, I feel like we can penetrate that Luton defence and just constantly cause problems. And like you say, put them away nice and early, because that's the biggest thing for us, I feel like, this season. The biggest problem is that we let games run on a bit too long, and we give teams enough time to feel like they can get back in it, even when we're 2-0 up. Even sometimes when we're 1-0, like, we're controlling games and it gets to like the 70th, 80th minute and it's just like, we just start to lose control, let them feel like they're getting back into it, concede too many chances, and it gets a bit shaky and it's not comfortable. And I feel like if we can start off the game really well on the front foot with the likes of Benta, Madders and Kulu in the middle. And also, I don't know if you guys see Kulu's interview, or it was like a masterclass he done with the Spurs Academy. He says he fancies himself playing in the middle going forward, like as in a Metzala number 10 type of role. What do you guys, I know Tops, we spoke about this before, maybe a couple months ago, and you've maintained that you feel like he's probably best in the middle, sort of off his attributes, but he also can be effective out wide. Do you think going forward for Spurs in particular, do you think that we'll see him play more down the middle than on the wing?
See, I think this is such a funny discussion to have, because I feel like he's initially been one of our most important players as a winger. But I just feel that his attributes are best placed as a advanced 8-10 in the central areas. I think whilst he's been super important in the way that we've attacked and that we've recycled possession, I feel like he seems to be more decisive and more effective when he's in that central area, running at players and having other players to play off, as opposed to being in an isolated position, taking players one-on-one, getting the ball onto his right or left foot and then moving back in field. I do think that moving forward, we will constantly continue to have him on that right wing, because I feel like with Maddison at 10 and him on that right side, we do have players who are capable of recycling possession and keeping the ball. And actually, I think your point about having a midfield tomorrow that is very heavy in possession and tries to go for the game actually would make more sense. This is the kind of game that I think he has to play, because we're going to constantly be moving the ball, constantly getting the ball to feet, moving, looting from side to side. And actually, if we have players who are capable of doing things like that, it would be to our benefit. I think long-term, at the top level, there has to be some level of output. I just think at the top level, 100%. You look at all the top teams, you look at Salah, you look at Saka, you look at Cole Palmer, you know, you look at Diaz. At the top level, there just has to be, you can have these really, really positive attributes, but there has to be something from an output perspective that makes you different from other players, that puts you in a, like a different level at a different point in terms of your ability and your quality. And I just feel that right now, whilst he's integral to the team, there's just that part of his game is missing. And I think that part, once it changes, then he will be someone who I think can actively start. But for me personally, even going back to his Palmer days when he was on loan and obviously the time he had at Juve, most of his really positive moments were actually in that advanced central role. And yeah. It's so funny that he was signed as a winger and he really excelled as a sort of front-footed wing-backy winger under Conte. But now, in this kind of role, in our sort of hybrid 4-3-3, he is a true winger. And I just don't think the way that Ange attacks, especially the way he uses his wingers, he is the kind of winger that we're going to get the best out of if he's playing on that right wing.
No, I hear it. Go on, Scott.
I think the time for him at right wing is done. After this summer, he needs to pack it in and start learning how to rotate the number 10 position with Maddison, because for me personally, that actually helps us in a sense, because obviously Maddison is like, what, 26, 27 or something like that?
26, yeah.
Yeah, so like Maddison would be the elder statesman. Obviously he has the right to start his position at number 10, and then he can be battling it out with Kulusevski for that position. And then we don't have to go out there and sign another 10, because I feel like the drop-off from Maddison to Kulu wasn't even... If I'm being really honest, I didn't think it was that big. I didn't think it was big at all, especially during the time period when we had our injury crisis. So, for me, I feel you bring Kulu into the 10 role, rotate him. There might be games where Maddison goes into the 8, Sal is on the bench, and Kulu's in the 10. That is hella attackive, but at least we have the option.
Agreed.
Because Kulu out wide, it gives us some sort of balance, yes. He can deliver a very good cross at times, correct? But he has not downloaded that Robin bag at all. That cut in and let it rip shot, he has not downloaded that. And there's been multiple opportunities this season where
he sets himself up for it, just doesn't take the shot.
I'm like, just let it go, bruv. Like, whatever trauma has been hurting you for the last few years, let it go, brother. Yeah, because I can't remember which game was it that we lost at home? Wolves. Mm-hmm. Wolves was just frighteningly annoying. Yeah, he had ample amount of opportunities where he cut in, could have let the shot go. And the goal he even scored against Wolves, it was because he didn't even get clean conviction and it went through the keeper's legs. I was like, rah, that's a bit lazy, bruv. You know, like, I don't even know how I'm supposed to feel about it. You know, but if he did, you know, download that kind of back, then yeah, you can keep him out wide because he's more than capable of retaining the ball. But I feel like I've seen enough of what he does at the 10 to be confident that he can just be our 10 and we can go out and get an actual right winger that is very potent. Only with cutbacks and crosses, but also with taking shots. Porro is more potent than him on the right hand side.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like he's one of those players definitely lacking conviction and that ruthlessness. Like, you need someone who's out on that wing that they want goals. Like, sort of like, you know, Rashford, like, although I don't really, not a big fan of him, he's greedy and he wants gold. Like, no matter what, whenever he's running, you want that player that's just hungry, that always wants to score. And I feel like he misses that. He's sort of, in basketball, they call them shot creators. Like, he'll more create the opportunity for someone else, not necessarily create an assist, but he'll move into positions and pull himself out of sort of certain situations so another player can take that role and sort of he passes on the responsibility. So I definitely agree on that. And he needs to improve that part of his game. But he's still a young player. He's still growing. And there's so much parts about a game, like you guys said, that is really good and that he is good at. And it just needs to be nurtured a bit more into the position that works well for our system, our new system, like you say, and in this team. But definitely someone that's always going to have a big contribution going forward. On the predictions for this game, what are you guys saying then? We all going Spurs win?
Yeah, Spurs win. 2-goal margin. Be good to get the feeling back, restore the feeling. Despite the loss, which I'm still really not particularly happy about, the league, it does kind of feel like the league position fourth is still there. We are only 3 points behind Villa with a game in hand. And Villa, they've got quite an interesting game tomorrow against Wolves at home. And they've not really been great, whilst Wolves have actually been quite good. So it would be interesting to see how that game goes up in Birmingham. But I think it's just important for us to grab our 3 points, collect ours, and then work on preparing ourselves for the upcoming games. West Ham, Liverpool, Arsenal, all these other games that are upcoming.
Big games, man. It's a big month. April is where we get into the techie business.
It's a huge month. It's a meaty month.
Yes, it's hella techie. I think we could win this. I think it could be a 4-1 or 3-1. Honestly, Luton are pretty good when they're at home and they've had a few good away days. Yeah, but I'll be honest with you, I feel like our stadium is one of those stadiums where when teams come and think they can play, you could hold some hella corn. Like, you have to be... I don't know what it is about our stadium, but you have to be very careful. Don't come over to our ground thinking you could... Because it can go either way. It can play very open and we could absolutely slap you up, or you can play very open and we just don't find the net. And then you end up, nicking it 2-1 or 3-1 or something silly like that. Like we saw earlier this season with Aston Villa, we gave them a slapping, and the man walked out of our stadium with a victory. The same with West Ham, we gave them a true slapping, and then man walked out of the stadium with a victory. We saw even with Chelsea, for 25 minutes, we gave them a slapping. Man got an offside goal, red card, 2 injuries, they won 4-1. Like, it doesn't even make sense. So I feel like it's one of those games where, we can definitely get the victory. I think if we do win and say Aston Villa draw or even if they win, it would just be 3 points. But like if Aston Villa, fall behind in terms of that result, it puts us right into fourth, So we basically just got to go and do our job. This is the time period for Son, Madison and Romero to galvanize the guys and, told them, look, we held for 3 bits against, Fulham. We didn't even score. It's the first time this season we haven't scored.
Exactly. Like, first time, I think we was on a 40, was it a 40-game Premier League?
29 in this, this season alone, it was 29 games straight or 28 games straight where we scored in every single game. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we've gone up to Fulham, Craven Cottage, and held nothing but four, bruv. It don't make no sense, bro.
It literally did. We went there, beat them 8 times in a row to go there and not score and get pumped 3-0.
Didn't do nothing. Even Werner missing the open goal. Listen, I've said my piece on Werner yet, and I know people think I'm trolling. I'm really not. I genuinely believe this guy is going to be our club by the end of summer.
Toes better get out, man.
I need people to understand. I don't want him here. Yeah, I don't want people to think, I want him. I do not want this guy at our club, but I've seen this story before. Yeah, there's a guy at our club right now that is there because one guy continuously buys his shirt. I don't mind baiting it out. His name's Højbjerg, and the guy that buys his shirt is Tobias. Yeah. And that guy's still at our club. It doesn't make sense. Yeah, I've spent the last four seasons just weeding out the crud from our club. I got rid of Dyer somehow, some way. You know, I'm trying to get rid of flipping Højbjerg. I got rid of the drunkard Hugo Lloris. Yeah, I even sent him packing all the way to the States. He got messed up in a blizzard. That's the kind of stuff I do. My next target is this Højbjerg guy. And this summer will be his final summer here. I promise you that.
I can't do another season with the Viking, man. He needs to get raided and sent back.
Get him up, man.
But no, I think we're going to win. I do think we're going to win this weekend. It's going to be a heavy one. I hope we keep a clean sheet. I think that's the biggest thing. Because we've not had a lot of those this season. I think we've probably had a handful.
I blame the midfield for the majority of
these. I do too. I feel like the defense hasn't really been the back four.
The defense can be a bit better, but like honestly, especially when we've had our 14, there's been games where I'm like, come on, man. There's no need for us to concede certain goals like that. Like we've got strong enough players in midfield to at least, you know, control the games. Because when we do control games, it's lovely to watch, you know. But the player that's at fault for the majority of that is Bissouma.
Yeah, man. Yeah. At this point, you just have to kind of let him try and play through it and improve. I also think as well, one thing that we're really struggling with is not scoring early enough. We've had this silly run as well where we're going into games, I think 7 or 8 games now, where we've not scored in the first half. And we seem to be having to come back into games or be drawing and then trying to win the games in the second half. So I think it's very important tomorrow to just try and just get at Luton from the very off and get an early goal to settle the nerves. And then they can hopefully try and continue. Because we did a lot of that early this season, especially in the first third of the season. But it seems to have just tailed off a little bit. And I don't know, it does feel like there is a little bit of confidence that's dropping in some guys. I'm not really sure why. It does look a little bit to me that Kulu's a little bit low in confidence. It looks like Bissouma's a little bit low in confidence. And maybe this is the kind of game to kind of boost that, just to kind of get them on top of it, where we can control the game like from start to finish, get some goals, and just grab the win. You know, that would really be important for us restoring the feeling, man.
Yeah, because I feel like all things are falling in place, man. We're playing at home. It's Luton. It's a team that's, like I said, they've got injuries. They've conceded, I think, 4 goals in 3 of their last, like, away fixtures. So, like, this is a team that is just open to conceding a lot of goals. And it's a team that it's the perfect game to give these boys confidence. But after this game, of course, we all think we're going to get a walkaway victors. And hopefully we do. We can put ourselves in a good position for that top 4. We do have midweek. We've got a midweek game of the team and the boys that we were praising earlier. West Ham.
Yeah, big one.
West Ham. It's away, that game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's away, London Stadium. I know maybe since they've moved to the new ground, it's not been as potent, but we never used to fancy an away game at West Ham. When they had Upton Park, it was a horrible fixture for us and we used to always have some trouble there. Of course, it's midweek. They've got all their players back from injury. What are we thinking about this one, boys? Because I can't lie. Obviously, off the back of our Luton game, we'll sort of be able to gauge it. But even if we win that game, I'm still going to be very cautious because that West Ham team, although I feel like they play bad football and we will be all over them, they've got killers, man. And they've got goal players. Scorers.
They've got players that can help.
I ain't trying to hear none of this nice talk, bruv. Listen, I said the same kind of crud when we were going up to Aston Villa. I want revenge. Run it back, Turbo. Yeah? We lost when we shouldn't have lost. Let's go over there and run this blood fire back. A Betty Bar, baby. Because I'm telling you now, if we go there and we lose, I'm going to slap Richarlison. Like, I'm telling you, it's going to be real violent, real quick. Yeah, because I've had enough of this. Like, I'm not having... I swear last season they beat us twice. I could be
No, they didn't. We drew the first game, which was at home, and then we lost. Which was away. It was a very early season 0-0.
Oh yeah.
1-1. Excuse me. 1-1. 1-1. And then we lost. No.
We won the second one. You see, even that, we won the second one.
We won the second one.
Even and that,
the last time we beat them at London Stadium was under Jose. That was our first away win. In
oh yeah, the 3-2. That the three, the 3-2 with Dele Alli. Listen,
yeah, Dele Alli and Kane. Yeah, yeah.
We need to go there. It's not going to be a nice game. It's going to be an absolute nasty game. It's literally 3 days after. It's on Tuesday. So straight after bank holiday Monday, you're back in the office, bruv. Like, these men need to turn up and deliver, because listen, you get back-to-back victories there and then you're kind of like, okay, you know, there's something there, because that running after that, it's not pretty at all, bro. There's four particular games that we know the entire league is focused on, and we all know it, but we need to get to those four games unscathed before we can even think about those four games. We need to have www.wf.com before we get to those four games, because those four games are going to come looking like the breakdown of WCW. It's going to be nasty, bruv. Like, seriously. You got Arsenal at home, which, listen, again, that's another match where I'm like, run it back, Turbo, because what they did to us last season was disgusting. That's when I ripped up my season ticket. Told Daniel Levy, if I come back to the stadium, it's going to be real violence for you. I'm telling you. Yeah. Obviously, City, we got them at home. That's an interesting one, because we know our games with City is always interesting.
We got something for them. Don't worry, man.
Liverpool away. Listen, Liverpool, I'm not here for this Klopp end season tour, bruv. Man don't like Bon Jovi. Actually, I do like Bon Jovi, but man don't like the rock and roll that Klopp likes, innit? Yeah. So let me tell you this right now. We better go over there and ruin their entire party. I want tears.
Yours on smoky setting for me. Man said he come for all the title challenges.
I want pure and utter. Listen, I don't want none of these men to think, oh yeah, we're gonna go face Spurs, pick up at three. Nah, I want utter chaos. Yeah, I want, in an ideal world, it will be lost, all three of them, and they're like, rah, we're still at square one. We went to face Spurs and got nothing from it. Yeah, more of that.
Yeah, man, like that Liverpool game. It's mad revenge, but nah, I'm not even on that, man. Them man are chasing that farewell tour. Like,
it's gonna be nasty. Hey, it's gonna be knowing us.
You ain't Kobe, man. You ain't getting no farewell tour. No,
listen, if we run something on Liverpool, that's nasty. But
you know what it is, though? Liverpool,
they could easily turn it 4-0, bruv. It could be.
It's the one game that they are going to want to kill us for because of that VAR. That VAR decision, they still cry about it to this day.
Good.
And I feel for them.
Good. Good.
Such
good,
is life, isn't it?
Good. No, I want it.
Hey, we needed to see that. But do you know what? The one game that you didn't mention, it hasn't been rescheduled yet, but I can't wait for that Chelsea game, man. That's who I need to run it back on. Stamford Bridge. We need to take a tour, man. We need to do a tour over Stamford Bridge, because what they've done to us, and obviously all the circumstances that happened in that day, that game, so unfortunate. I'm looking forward to killing Chelsea, man, putting the nail in their coffin, ending their season, you know, leaving them in the bottom half of the table. We need to make our mark in that game. But back to the West Ham game, back to the performance. Tops, what are you thinking about that? How are you feeling for the West Ham? Because I know it's one to be weary for.
West Ham is a difficult one, because generally I think they got lots of killers in their team. I think Bowen, Paqueta, Kudus. I think Alvarez has been really good this season as well. I'm looking forward to it, because I feel like North London... London derbies generally against West Ham are always quite highly contested. But I do feel like this is the kind of game that we have to try and get a win. We just have to try and get a win. West Ham have been actually quite good this season in many respects. They're still on their little European run. But I feel like we need to go there and just grab some points, man. We need to grab some points. At this point, we're going into the last little stretch of the season, and it's just important for us to make sure, before, especially around this crazy run we have, we need to grab as many points as possible, because it really is going to be a nasty, mucky fight between us, Villa and Man United. And it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top, but I think we just got to do our job and just grab points wherever we can. We just got to grab points. We have to. I feel like they are definitely there to be got to be got at. I watched their last game, which they played Burnley at home. And to be honest with you, they didn't really deserve to get that last minute point against Burnley, which was actually really interesting because Burnley came and really, really played like a really smart low block tactic that day. But then a few days later, they were able to restore their confidence and they smashed Frankfurt like 5 or 6 nil. So that was a bit of a killer. But I'm very interested to see how we get on. It's been a while since we've won there. But I do think, like Yao said, similar to the game against Villa, you know, we didn't particularly deserve to lose the game at home. And they smash and grab that one. But we need to go and get it back in blood in Stratford on Tuesday.
Nah, for real, we definitely need to get it back in blood because that was one of our games that we actually performed really well without the players that we didn't have. Like, we really performed well. And I was so flabbergasted. That goal that Bowen scored when it went off the post, hit Udogie or whatever, it was just... You couldn't write that type of goal, man. That's just the football gods talking and literally giving them everything they wanted. But what are we talking about for prediction then? I know it's probably hard. It's hard to go out there and give a score prediction on this one. So if you can't give a score prediction, just let me know what your thoughts on walking away with the result is. But yeah, what are we thinking for that?
For the West Ham game, I feel like it's a tough one to predict, to be honest with you, especially with that stadium. I think it's going to be a tight game. If anything, it'll be a 2-1 victory. If we are going to nick it, it's going to be a 2-1 victory. But I wouldn't be surprised if it'll be a score draw, 2-2, something nasty like that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm probably thinking somewhere 2-1. I'm not sure which way to feel like. It'll probably be 1-1 and the game will try and be nicked very close to the end. Someone will probably grab it. 2-1 is probably what I say. I think we can go there and get a dub, but similarly to the way we fell against Fulham, there are some of these days that you're just not sure how you're going to turn up. And they have killers, like I've said. You know, they've got guys that could hurt us, but also we have guys that could hurt them too. So I think 2-1 either way. I'm just not sure which.
Yeah, I've got a feeling. I've got a feeling we're going to win, man. Even though I did say that it was going to be a techie game and West Ham do have some killers, I feel like we catch them out. We catch them at a time that they're probably preparing for some other fixtures and they've got some other things in their mind that they're more looking forward to. So I feel like we can probably walk away with something. Like you said, it'll probably be a 2-1 or something similar to that. But it's one of those ones that we're going to have to be really, really wary and watching out because West Ham, like I said, they got killers. They can score off of one or two chances and that's just how they play. So we just got to make sure that we don't give up or concede too many chances, especially late on in the game, because that's where we tend to fall off. But before we end the stream, there was just one comment that I did want to get to that came in from Mo from Leicester. He says, with the links to Eze and Dani Olmo, is it imperative that we get a player that is good centrally and out wide due to Madison's lack of fitness and the amount he gets fouled? And what does the panel think of both Eze and Olmo? Starting off with you, Scott, bro. What are you saying?
I think both top talents. In an ideal world, yes, I'll take both. But essentially, I would actually, considering the fact of our homegrown quota being an issue that we've had for the last few seasons, then I'll take Eze. I'll take Eze because you could easily, I'm not saying we'd have to, but you could move Eze to like the wing position. You can play him in the 10, you can play him in the 8. It's very flexible, easily a strong press resistant player. And we saw when Crystal Palace came to our ground, he was, you know, their standout player. There was nobody close to him in that Crystal Palace team. And, you know, without him, that team would probably be relegated. He'd be, I think Eze in our squad would have the same, and this is probably, it might shock a few people, but I think he'd have the same kind of impact as Sar.
Yeah. You know, I've said it a number of times. I'm totally with Yao. I think we should go all in for Eze. And I say it for a number of reasons. I think he's at the right age. I think in terms of his trajectory as a player, in terms of where he's gone from Reading to QPR, or QPR, Reading, Crystal Palace, I think this is probably the best time in his career without having too much pressure on him. I also believe the position he plays is very, very right for what we kind of need. He kind of can operate as a 10, as an 8. And actually, there's been times he's operated as a left sort of attacker for Crystal Palace. And I think, and I've said this a number of times before as well, you know, if we're going to use Kulusevski on the right hand side as a central kind of player who kind of is very good at recycling the ball and actually is able to create some level of goal opportunities for himself and others, why not have a player just as good on the left who can do something very similar? Plus, we know that he likes to move in field, and we also do know that Maddison likes to move kind of onto that left sort of channel. So having a player like that with proven amount of Premier League experience, I think it's a deal that if we can get done, we absolutely have to get done. I'm such a fan of players like him. He's extremely explosive. He's extremely technical. He's a goal threat. He's a set piece threat. He's a Londoner. Like I just think this deal, similar to the Maddison one last season, just makes so much sense. And I think we're probably the right kind of club to make that level for his jump up, especially if he wants to go to play in Europe and possibly internationally as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, both of you. I think Eze is the perfect player to come into this team. Sort of fits in well with the players that we got, the likes of Maddison, the young English core group, just the young players in general. We saw Son and some of the other boys tapping him up after the game against Palace, you know, giving him a little word after he slapped that free kick top bins. I just feel like with his versatility to play in the 8, he could play on the 10, he could play on the left wing. And like you said, he fits the homegrown quota. You really can't go wrong with bringing in a player of his quality into our team. He just only elevates us. And depth-wise, first team-wise, I think he fits perfect. It's just whether we can secure him down for the fee. Because I feel like we definitely have to battle out of another one or two Premier League clubs, potentially B and C, for his signature, because he is a top player that many people want. But before we head out, just shout out to Mo Lester, of course, again, for leaving that comment. My hair transplant, Topsy, he loves your overshirt, and Billy Carnes for watching in from Twitter, X. But thank you everyone for that has tuned in live. If you're not live, thank you again for tuning in. Please make sure you do follow, like, subscribe on all platforms. You know, it's New Spurs Order on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. If you are on YouTube, leave a subscribe, leave us a comment what you guys think of the stream, what you guys think the predictions, and what is your prediction for the Luton and West Ham game, as well as if you are watching on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, do leave us a comment and like. But thank you guys for watching. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the New Spurs Order podcast. I was your host, Jords. Thank you, Tops. Thank you, Scott, for being here with us. And happy Good Friday. Happy Easter weekend, people, man.
Peace.
Yourself available too. He's sent across, looking for Thomas.
This is opened up for Maddison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. Kulusevski!
Sports Social Podcast Network.